Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, January the 7th. And as we like to do from time to time, we'll be chatting today with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. You know, one of the big stories of 2022, aside from, of course, the Biden presidency and the House of Representatives and the governor's races, but certainly one of the most interesting ones is going to be the U.S. Senate races. And that's why we're calling on our friend Barry Castleman tonight to get an analysis of what's going on. I have selected six states that I think could determine or could break the 50-50 tie. It's a 50-50 tie. So, you know, any net one and that party has a majority in the Senate. And I've got six that I've selected. I'm sure Barry has a few more. So let me say a very warm Happy New Year to our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. Happy New Year, Barry.
Prospero año nuevo. A usted.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. Your Spanish gets better every time, Barry.
Well, thank you. Muchísimas gracias.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, I know that we were talking a little bit about the weather up in the Minneapolis area, and this weather report, it's always fun to hear from the weather up north, Barry.
Well, it's not fun to report it. It's pretty cold. We're heading into about 21 degrees below zero Fahrenheit tonight, but then it's going to warm up. And this is Minnesota after all.
Well, that's it. I mean, it is. I remember when I lived in Wisconsin, that's about what you got in January, you know, temperatures like that. And it comes with the territory, literally, up in Minnesota. Barry, let's talk a little bit about this year of 2022. The U.S. Senate is our main topic tonight. But here we are 1 year, almost a year, of the Biden presidency. His approval ratings are very bad. Overall, state of the country, people are not happy. I just saw a poll today that he's like at 25% with independents, which is not a good number. So give me your sense of where we are in the Biden presidency, literally a year into it, Barry.
Well, it's complicated, but not without its simple explanation. The fact of the matter is the Democratic Party has been hijacked, if you will, by a faction of the party. The activist radical left of the party, the group that failed in these 16 and 20 election presidential elections, led by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren et al., and the squad, they failed to win the voters' approval, and so the nominees were Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. But it turns out, in the end, it was the left faction, which, because they were the squeaky wheel, they weren't even the majority in their own party, but they made all the noise. And they harassed the leaders. I mean, whether it be Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, or Chuck Schumer, these are all pragmatic, more moderate figures in their own right. But they've all responded to the left because they're making all the noise. The problem is that the public, the voters, are not interested really in the agenda. Things such as defunding the police, closing schools, political correctness. I mean, there's so many issues on the from the left that the media, the so-called mainstream media, which of course has become quite partisan, is supporting, and those, therefore they fill the airwaves and the newspaper pages. But the fact of the matter is, the voters aren't buying it. And I'm not guessing, because we have the strong evidence, number one, of the 2021 election, where all, even in places like New York City, extreme voices were rejected, and in the polling, where you have Biden pretty much at 38% to 42%, there are a few polls which show him higher, but they are suspect. The fact is that even the more liberal polls are showing him at 38% to 42%, somewhere in that vicinity, and it bounces back and forth, but down anywhere from 12 to 18 points. This is, of course, untenable for the 2022 election. If this is the case, there will be a huge red wave, a tidal wave, and it's almost incalculable how many House seats will go down. And what will happen in the Senate, the Democrats have the numerical advantage of having fewer seats of their own incumbents up, but they still have four or five seats up that are vulnerable. They will lose almost all those seats, and the Republicans, which also have four or five potentially vulnerable seats, won't lose any, or only one or two. So the Democrats will lose control of the Senate. They're almost certain to lose control of the House. And the question is, how many seats? The low estimate these days is 30. The high is 60 or 70. But it will take... Now, if things can change, they're not likely to change, because one of the points I've been making in my writing is that in spite of the fact that the election is under 10 months away, which the cliche is that's a lifetime, it's not really, because what's happening now is the filing deadlines are happening, and the nominees for the various House and Senate races, gubernatorial races, and state legislative races are all being determined now. And the Democrats are demoralized because of the rejection of their agenda. And so fewer, better, stronger candidates are running, whereas the Republicans are much more optimistic and are, in fact, crowding. There's getting a large fields for important races where the Republicans think they can win. So my point is, yes, things can change, but how much can they change? One of the interesting paradoxes about the present situation is the stock market is close to all-time highs. Unemployment is near all-time lows. Unemployment is low. So all of the main features of a strong economy are there. And yet all this negative attitude of voters normally would be responding positively. Of course, there's a lot of anxiety. Inflation has appeared for a while. And the ability of the government to subsidize people is coming to an end.
All right. Well, I think from what I can tell, just on a personal level, as well as just conversation with friends, I think the inflation is really the problem for the Biden administration. One of many, but certainly that's the one that touches people the deepest, because it goes into your pocketbook in such a crazy way. The other thing, Barry, and then we'll get to the U.S. Senate after I make this point. The other thing, and I'd like to get your reaction to what I'm about to say, the other thing that has happened is that the virus that was used against President Trump in 2020, I mean, the Democrats basically said, we can do it better. Vote for us because we can do it better. We can manage and control this virus situation better. That has completely backfired on the Democrats because now President Biden is getting very low marks on the virus. He began with good marks, but now he's getting very bad marks. So inflation and the virus, not so much the virus, but the management of the virus is really hurting President Biden, Barry.
Well, President Biden is hurting President Biden. He is turning out to be a very weak president. He probably never should have run this last time, although he was considered the great white hope, if you will, to prevent the Democrats losing again to Trump. And they needed a moderate or a seeming moderate. He's turned out to be anything but. Nancy Pelosi was always considered a pragmatist, as was Chuck Schumer. And yet they are caving in almost entirely into the left progressive agenda. The fact of the matter is that we are seeing a party which has a very serious problem and isn't doing it. And here's the key. They're not changing course. They're doing more of the same. They're going to try and pass the infrastructure bill. There's still talk of packing the court. They're still pushing energy policies, which are driving up gasoline prices and home heating oil, and which are putting us at a disadvantage internationally. And we haven't even talked at all about foreign policy, and particularly in the foreign domestic policy that involves your neck of the woods, the border, crisis which continues. I noticed that the administration finally gave in and reinstated the remain in Mexico policy, which they had tried to sabotage or dump because it wasn't an open-door policy. But Trump had negotiated it with Mexico, and it was successful.
Right.
Now, you're much more, right? You're right there, so you could, I don't kind of second-guess you in terms of how bad this crisis is. But my impression is that the crisis is still bad, not only bad, but getting worse.
Well, it is because there's a problem on the border, and this is going to affect some of the states, you know, like Nevada and, well, certainly Arizona. And the crisis sort of ties into the virus in this respect, Barry. You know, if you're telling people that they have to get vaccinated or they're going to lose their jobs or whatever, but you're allowing people to enter the country without any proof of vaccination, that is a very difficult policy to defend. How do you explain that to people who are living here? You know, yeah, it's impossible to defend. Impossible. I mean, as you know, we were down in Mexico for the holidays, and I had to show, in order to get back into the United States, I had to test negative. I had to literally bring a piece of paper to the airport and prove to the immigration or whatever that I had tested negative before I could come in. Well, you know, I had to do that. I didn't mind doing it. But when I hear that people are walking into the country without the same requirement, like you said, that's an impossible position to defend for an administration, and it becomes very, very complicated. And when we talk about Arizona, I think that's one of the things that we're going to mention. Let me take a break, Barry, and then when we come back, we will get into specifics of the U.S. Senate race with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Barry Castleman. Barry, let's get into the U.S. Senate races. I have six that I wanted to talk to you about, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona. I like the GOP chances in those. And then New Hampshire, I think the Democrat is going to hold on to that. Pennsylvania, the Republicans could lose that. And Wisconsin, you know, depending on who runs, could be tough. So I see it right now, maybe the Republicans picking up one or two seats in the Senate. They have the majority, but maybe one or two seats, 51-49, 52-48. That's how I see it right now, but I don't know as much as you do. So I like to hear your analysis, Barry.
Well, interesting enough, you're more partisan Republican than I am. I'm more neutral. But I see it much more serious for the Democrats. I think that Arizona and Nevada and I think one of the things about New Hampshire was when Chris Sununu didn't choose to run, everybody thought, well, that's it. But it turns out that Ms. Maggie Hassan, the Democratic incumbent, is not very popular. And even against now the lesser-known candidates, she's at 46%. Now, remember, when you're the incumbent, you've got to be above 50 because usually you get the number or less of what you get in the polls. There's not really a lot of margin of new votes. And even though she has a lead, remember New Jersey, the governor there, one of the reasons I predicted on this show early on that New Jersey was going to be close was that the governor was only at 50. Well, Maggie Hassan is at 46. She's in trouble. And she has a serious opponent, a former brigadier general who's, I think, a much underappreciated candidate. So I think New Hampshire's pickup. I think Georgia is a little more problematic. Herschel Walker is popular, and Mr. Warnock is the incumbent. But I think if President Trump doesn't get too involved in Georgia, I think Warnock can lose. What are the other two you mentioned?
Well, I mentioned Nevada, where the Republicans have a very good candidate.
Well, I said
there.
Nevada looks to
yeah.
me like a definite, and the development, even though it was, I wish no one ill, Harry
right.
Reid passed away.
Yes.
Harry Reid left the Senate many years ago, but he remained a huge power in Nevada politics and got two women elected to the Senate
mm-hmm. right.
following his retirement. The current incumbent depended a great deal on Harry Reid's help. He's gone. And there's a very popular Republican opponent, Laxalt.
Yes.
And so I think we that's definitely a pickup.
Right.
Oh, and you mentioned Pennsylvania.
Well, I mentioned Pennsylvania, Barry, because the concern that I have there, first of all, I agree with you. Let me just make a quick point. I agree with your analysis a few minutes ago that if there is a wave, all bets are off. I mean, if there's a wave, any close election goes to whichever way the wave is coming. That happened in 2018 for the Democrats. It happened in 2006 for the Democrats. It happened in 94 for the Republicans. You know this better than I do. In the case of Pennsylvania, my concern is that I don't know who the Republican nominee is and how strong. There's a doctor, I guess, who's running, but I don't know how strong he is. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, Barry.
Well, Dr. Oz is a – we're not sure who he is. We know who he is. He's a famous personality. And an interesting – I have his book – which is very amusing and very authoritative. But there's another candidate, I think it's David McDonald or David McIntosh, I can't remember his name, who's a businessman who, if he enters the race, will become the front runner. But it doesn't really matter because the Democrats don't have a great candidate. And the problem is the president has screwed up Pennsylvania royally. His energy policy has turned off the entire western Pennsylvania. Central Pennsylvania is always Republican. And eastern Pennsylvania, dominated by Philadelphia, has a crime wave. So the president's advantages, whatever they were in 2020, are gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Same as
and that was
Ohio.
A very close election, Barry, in 2020 between Trump and Biden, as I recall. Pennsylvania was
right.
Within a couple of points. So that was a... Now, what about Wisconsin?
So I don't agree that Pennsylvania... Now, you didn't mention North Carolina.
Right, okay.
And I've recently interviewed the former Governor McCrory, who's a very good candidate, but he's being opposed by a Trump-supported candidate. The important thing is, however, that North Carolina is a Republican state. Remember, it went for Trump in 2020. It did not succumb to whatever happened in Georgia and Virginia. So North Carolina is also a potential swing state, but I think the Republic, remember, everything I'm saying is posited on the fact that the Republicans are going to have some kind of a wave. How big, I don't know. But the idea that they won't have a wave, that somehow the president is going to make a comeback, it's possible. I'll never say never, but I can't see how it happens given the president's conditions,
right,
his inclinations, and the circumstances in which he's operating.
Yes. And he doesn't have, Barry... you know, there isn't a popular vice president who can go out and do a lot of this campaigning. That's the other thing. I mean, even if, you know, you don't have that vice president who can go out and make the difference in a competitive race, because Vice President Harris, yeah, she's not doing very well either, Barry.
She's doing even worse than the president. Her poll numbers are terrible. She has no confidence. Even the media has no confidence in her. She's lost 7 senior staff members since the first of the year. She keeps making ridiculous statements. And people are asking what she's doing. Of course, people are asking what has Mr. Biden done? What are his accomplishments? And I can't think of any, but maybe if you're a Democrat, you could make a list. The fact of the matter is they are in a very weak position, and instead of turning things around, changing course, which is what parties usually do to respond, they are not. Now, one of the things that's important to remember, especially in House races, at some point, and it's already begun a little bit, the individual candidates will start to break with the leadership of the party. So Governor Polis of Colorado simply said, the pandemic is over. I'm not going to issue any mandates, no lockdowns. There are cases. It's endemic. But there's nothing more we can do as a government policy other than provide good medicine and care. So there will be now individual House members, and there, I think, because the House member has 2 choices. Either they resign or they have to break with the president and the Democratic Party. Otherwise, except in urban centers, and even there's problems, but everywhere else in all those races that were carried or were close for Trump, they're going to lose all those races, 30. And then they start to lose more. And as you pointed out, their administration popularity among independents is incredibly low. And they're losing Hispanics. They're losing
right.
blacks. They're losing Jews. The Middle East policy makes no sense.
Well, I just saw, Barry, forgive me for interrupting you, but I just saw a story today. In fact, I have a post hopefully coming out tomorrow morning at the American Thinker talking about how they not only are losing Hispanics, but they're losing Asians, that the Asian population is breaking away for similar reasons to the Hispanic population, and that is values and education and crime. Asians, like Hispanics, are turning out to be very patriotic and very conservative. And when you have a Democrat Party that talks about defunding the police and keeps talking about how bad the country is, that doesn't play well in populations, many of these immigrant populations who really love the United States, Barry.
Well, we saw in this January 6th commemoration, so-called. Now, whatever happened on January 6th a year ago was dumb. And Trump really didn't behave in a great fashion. But the idea that it was a coup d'etat, a conspiracy, and this attempt to overturn the government is ridiculous. And the country, the polls today were, I think Rasmussen and other polls, are showing the public isn't buying it. But it's part of the Democratic strategy, which is to call everyone who doesn't agree with them a racist and to blame everything on Trump. And, of course, that's no longer holding much strength. Trump is no longer in office. They may make it possible for him to come back. That may be, but that's not at stake in 2022. That's 2024. So what we have here is a party reeling from disaster to disaster. Even when they do the right thing, for example, that agreement with Britain and Australia was a good idea, and I give Biden high marks for doing it. But he screwed it up by antagonizing France in the process.
That's right.
He had to go through a whole big process to try and repair the damages, mm-hmm. although the French are not completely without fault here, to be fair to Mr. Biden.
Mm-hmm.
But his Middle Eastern policy makes no sense. I'm not sure what his policy is in regards to China. It's verbally tough, but it mm-hmm. doesn't seem to be strong yet. The relationships with Europe, and as you know, I had a piece in my Prairie Editor.
Yes, you did.
About
yeah.
all the changes going on in Europe, and there's a dynamic taking place there that France and Britain and Italy and Germany are all going through profound political changes as well as economic mm-hmm. and social changes. And Europe is getting weaker, not stronger.
That's right. Well,
and the president is not seeming to respond in a useful way. So what we have here is we have a weak administration in a time of great anxiety, lots of economic stock market bubbles. Certain individual stocks are way overpriced. Others are not necessarily. But how long the market can hold is a question.
That's right.
That can be legitimately asked. And remember, the stock market isn't just a thing for traders. Today, because of the pension funds, almost every American has a stake in the stock market. His pension
That's right.
fund is almost entirely, or her IRA or pension fund, is invested in the stock market.
That's exactly right. So you could have very quick losses of your pension program, I mean, as has happened before. One last point that I wanted to ask you, Barry, with respect to the politics and how this is going to play, not just in the U.S. Senate races, but the House races, governor's races, and overall, is the situation with the public schools. There seems to be, for example, here in Texas, the schools are open. No big debate about that. There are some districts, you know, are being more careful than others. I have no problem with that. But the schools are open. But in many, many blue areas, Chicago, the one that comes to mind, you know, the teachers union is closing the schools, does not want to open the schools. The parents are angry. We saw what happened in Virginia. Do you think this could be a big problem for the Democrats? The schools in 2022, Barry?
Of course it is. And it's and one of the reasons it's so risky is it involves their base. It's like the issue on the police. They were wanted to fund the police. And who were the people most supportive of the police? Black voters, Hispanic voters, who felt more vulnerable and nobody likes bad policemen, and there were mistakes made, and no one's defending shootings and violence that is unnecessary. But the fact of the matter is that without a police force, you have no order. And we saw what's happened in Chicago, New York, and especially in San Francisco. And I noticed the mayor of San Francisco has done a 180. They had basically invited people to come in and steal department stores, drug stores, the grocery stores. Said, well, we're not going to do business if you're not going to protect us. And San Francisco is a battlefield. And finally, belatedly, the mayor who created the problem, helped create the problem, now says we've got to be tough on crime. Same is true in Chicago, Portland, Philadelphia, as I've mentioned, one of the factors that's going to play in the Senate race and the governor's race in Pennsylvania is the fact that there's very high crime in Philadelphia, in minority areas, and they're not going to support Democrats who don't want to provide them with security. It's just not going to happen.
That's
right. We're talking with laws of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, so, I mean, if it weren't for the fact that the ideology of the far left, I mean, they basically are socialist. They want to change the nature of American economy and government. And if they don't get their way, they do things like pack the court or end the filibuster. You know, there's all kinds of devices that they invented. Harry Reid invented a device by which McConnell was able to get the judges through. Interestingly enough, 40-some judges have been put through by Biden's choices because McConnell's been criticized, including by Trump, for sort of caving in, but he's not, in my view. He's very smart. He's allowing district judges to be approved because he doesn't want to be, I mean, the charges of being hypocritical would be so obvious if when they prevented. So he's basically saying, you can put your judges through now as long as you have the support of the public. But once you lose the support of the public, you're not going to get any judges. And he's going to lose the support of the public in 2022. McConnell's going to do an about-face, all calculated, I believe. This is my idea. He's going to prevent any judges or very few judges getting appointed. So remember, Trump appointed over 200 judges.
Mm-hmm.
Biden's got 40-some. But by the time they get to the election, it may be 60. And then it may stop. And then what happens if there's a Supreme Court opening? They don't have the votes.
Right.
We haven't mentioned Senator Manchin,
yes,
who's turned out to be quite an interesting figure,
mm-hmm,
and will go down in history as a break, B-R-A-K-E,
mm-hmm,
on the Democratic agenda, and may turn out to be a heroic figure in the end.
Well, some people say he's going to save the party.
Well, that's rationalization.
Yeah.
The fact is, he stopped the infrastructure bill. It's probably not going to pass. I don't know what they are going to pass. And already, we're into the campaign season. And if they think this is going to work in the campaign season, that's just politically crazy. The time for them to pass it was previous to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think not much is going to happen in 2022.
Silvio, it's not popular. And you don't push something that's not popular, especially when you're a Senate candidate, an incumbent, like Mr. Mark Kelly in Arizona. If he pushes the infrastructure and Arizonans don't want it, he's going to lose.
Right.
No matter who the candidate is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's one of the vulnerable ones, I think, in 2022. Barry, let's wrap it up for today, but I hope to revisit this topic maybe in the spring or so, when we have maybe a better idea of who the actual candidates are going to be. I can tell you that just to get back to a point you made before about Hispanics, that there are some very good prospects for Republicans in South Texas. And I think that's going to be one of the big stories of 2022, is how well Republicans do down here in South Texas on the border. And that's a direct reflection of President Biden's disaster on the border, Barry.
Right. Well, I've observed that myself. And in conversations with you, I've had it reinforced. But I think it goes beyond Texas. It goes to Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Colorado, all states where these immigrants are coming and are unvaccinated, undocumented, and are taking jobs away from citizens, including Hispanics, blacks,
right,
and union members. So what the Democrats are doing is they are compromising their own base,
mm-hmm,
and turning away. The poll numbers are showing that Hispanics today are evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats. Yes, Republicans and Democrats. It used to be overwhelming. It used to be,
right,
65 to 35.
There's, yeah,
been,
you're
inroads,
right,
in black voters. There's been a huge shift among Jewish voters. And then the key number, suburban women,
mm-hmm,
who really didn't particularly like Trump, and in 2018 and 2020 went back to the Democratic Party. They are now returning to Republicans. And
I think education has a lot to do with that. I think that what's happening in the public schools,
right,
is a huge problem there. I know that we saw in Virginia how the mothers got involved in that campaign. And I can tell you, here in Texas, the mothers are, I mean, at the forefront of these battles with the school boards. And so I think you're right. I think that's another big story. But you have a great weekend, Barry, and thank you as always for joining us. Give us a quick review of the Prairie Editor, maybe your last article. I know you wrote about Europe, but what are you working on now for your next article?
Well, I'm working on an article, on a couple of articles, basically trying to understand the mentality of the Democratic Party left, because certainly the leadership, the formal leadership, is no longer really in charge. And so trying to understand why they are willing to throw away control Congress and the White House, which is what they're going to do if they don't change course. But I understand it's ideological, and there are a lot of young people. You have two older figures, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, but the Squad and a number of other younger left radical candidates sense wrongly, I think, from the 2020 election, which was a mixed bag, but sense that they were last going to bring at least a social welfare state to the U.S., it isn't going to happen.
No.
It isn't going to happen.
That's right. It's not going to happen.
Because I don't want it to happen. It's because the public doesn't want it.
That's right. No, I think you're right about that. I think that's been, if there's been a blessing in disguise about the last 12 months, is that I think the public has seen the crazy left of the Democrat Party, and they're saying, no way, no way. We just don't like them one bit. Barry, have a great weekend, and thank you again for your time, and stay warm up there, and let's pick it up again in the spring and see where we are with all these predictions.
Okay, thank you, Silvio.
My pleasure.
Good night.
My pleasure. Good night, Barry. Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, we have a link to his website. I've said it many, many times that the Prairie Editor, the website, is one of the very best places in the country to learn about what's going on and to really get a sense of what's happening in our politics. I love it, and I've always recommended it to everybody who I've come into contact with. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.